Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
And welcome, my wonderful audience. As always, so pleased to be here talking to some of the greatest people around the world. Today, talking with a great man in Denmark. And I just again want to tell you all how much I appreciate this opportunity to communicate with you every week. I get to sit down at this microphone and talk with you, and I get to select somebody really interesting and important to share with you. Last week I had a glitch in my communications, and I ended up spending an hour talking about what's on my mind about psychiatric drugs. I started out with tardive dyskinesia, that dreadful movement disorder caused by psych drugs, because that was on my mind, and doing some more thinking about it. And then I went on to talk about some of the most important stuff I've ever talked about, which is, you know, what is the common pathway of all psychoactive substances, basically, except for their initial stimulation, some of them. And that final pathway, I believe, is not caring. Psychiatric drugs are chemicals for not caring. And then when you give enough of it, the person cares so little that they can be easily managed in an involuntary, coercive setting. So think about that when you meet somebody who's on these drugs. Think about that when you're treating somebody on these drugs. Think about that when you're on these drugs yourself. By disrupting your frontal lobes, they're making you not care. It's not even just your front lobes, your whole brain, really. Limbic system, the whole works. Basal ganglia, it's the whole works. And not to mention the toxicity to the rest of your body. But what I'm really looking at now is this implication of a worldwide epidemic of less caring people. That's the theme of my last week's show. I think it was a really important theme. And for some reason, I just don't rush on to the show to do an hour talk. And I can't even tell you exactly why. Maybe because I miss the faces in the audience. But I'm going to do it once in a while, and I was pushed to, and I'm really glad I did. So, you know, learn about what rambles through my mind and what I'm really focusing on in some of my future writing about the epidemic of not caring. I'm going to be interested to see what my guest thinks about that. My guest. You're there, Peter? I hear you're there.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, and you sound good. Good to hear your voice, my friend. We're talking with professor and physician Peter C. Goetze, G-O-T-Z-S-C-H-E. Peter's been on my show a half dozen times or more. One of these days I'm going to get around to making an archive of just his shows, maybe of two or three other people's shows. It's so good to just document what this man is thinking. Peter's a co-founder of the Cochrane Collaboration, which has tried to set standards for medical literature, reviewing medical literature in the light of real science, and not the fake science-based medicine, which we have in the U.S., which is really drug company medicine, but genuine scientific analysis and evaluation of scientific journals. There are the articles. And he himself, he's published more than 70 papers in the top five general medical journals. And he's got five books out. And two of them are just critical books for us. And one of them, the first one, is Deadly Medicine. And the one that really strikes home is his latest book, Deadly Psychiatry and Organized Denial. One of the most important books in the field ever. I'm just glad you're alive. Glad you're here, Peter. And I give you the microphone to take off in any way you want.
Well, thank you a lot, Peter. I'm a specialist in internal medicine, so psychiatry was not my subject. But I was drawn into it because somebody wanted to study something in psychiatry. So I'm now deep into it. And to start where Peter finished with the lack of caring, I really think you hit the nail there, Peter. I am overwhelmed by emails from patients. Very few of them have been lucky, because when they had psychiatric distress, they were lucky to find a doctor who actually cared for them, so that they healed without getting psychiatric drugs. And then there are all the others, the vast majority, that write to me about their stories, about how their lives have been ruined for 5, 10, sometimes 20 years because of psychiatric drugs, and how they are struggling to get off them. And some of these people say exactly like you, Peter, if only somebody had cared for me. And some of them say, it took 10 years before any psychiatrist actually got my story and found out that I was sexually abused as a child. And this big trauma actually was what became too much for me. And the only thing I experienced was antipsychotic drugs, which ruined 10 years of my life. It is so awful. And now when you're talking about the science, I have studied the science in many medical specialties, and I've never seen anything like psychiatric research. Very, very little of that is something you can rely on. And particularly the drug trials are done by the companies, as you indicated, and they have been manipulated to an incredible extent. And all these studies about that you can see a psychiatric disease on brain scans, or that it is in your genes and so on, I've studied all that very carefully. And I come to the same conclusion every time. The famous novel by the Dane H.C. Andersen, there is a statue of him in Central Park in New York. He wrote The Emperor's New Clothes.
I hear you.
Yeah. It is so sad. And people are so desperate. They now write to me from many countries, and they want me to help them in court cases. Some of them have hidden themselves or hidden their daughter or son, because if the psychiatric department finds out where they are, they will send the police for them and drug them and destroy their lives. A little kid of 9 years was put on antipsychotics in Finland, and the father persuaded the psychiatrist to lower the dose, because they always increase the dose, so it just became worse. But then he persuaded a new psychiatrist to lower the dose, and actually the child got rid of the antipsychotic altogether. But then he ended up in a children's home because the parents got divorced and the father couldn't look after the child. And at that children's home, there were regular health checks. And this is about the worst thing you can do, because then all these doing-gooders, they come out and they look at the children, and then they find something wrong with them, and then they are forcefully admitted to a psychiatric department again. So to escape that, now that the child was doing well, the father took the child and went to Spain and stayed there for the full year. The father was retired, so he could do that. And as soon as they came back to Finland, the child was kidnapped by psychiatry and put in a facility where the father even doesn't know where the child is. The child is gone. How can you treat people like that? That is just one of the many stories I read every day, Peter.
Psychiatry is the most totalitarian institution short of an outright political dictatorship. You know, it's the only place in the Western world where you can wear a suit and operate like a combination Secret Service, FBI, CIA, and have all this power over people. It's just wholly inimical to the founding principles of this country and to any sense of civil personal rights. And, you know, I have legal cases like this. I don't want to get into them because I want to hear more from you. I want this to be very much a chance for people to hear you again. But I have legal cases very similar to this. And in one of them, the young man was about to have electroshock treatment, and her lawyer called me, and I talked to the lawyer, and the mother kidnapped him from the hospital, and despite a very rapid withdrawal, he went from being somebody they said would die without ECT to a perfectly healthy young man. Over a period of a few weeks, he started to happen. When I saw him a few months later, he literally was a perfectly healthy young man. And it's just desperate what's going on. And it's worldwide. But, you know, I think you and I probably agree the worst of it all is the quiet epidemic. I mean, these are egregious, violent assaults that you're describing that I was just hinting at.
Yeah.
But we're making millions and millions of people less than they can be. We're cutting at the core of their ability to feel and to be themselves.
Yeah. And I can give you another example that I have heard a good deal about. This was a Danish man who was so much against the war in Afghanistan and that there were Danish soldiers participating in this. So he wanted the Danish soldiers to come home instead of participating in the war. And he was foolish enough to write a letter to the Danish Prime Minister saying that if he didn't end the war on Denmark's behalf, I mean by taking out the Danish soldiers and send them home, he threatened to murder the Prime Minister. And of course, that was a very stupid mistake. But then he came under forensic so-called care. And now he has been there for years. And as I have heard, he is a peaceful man. He wants peace in the world. He couldn't harm anybody. He hasn't harmed anybody. But he is still under so-called forensic care. And they have done everything they can to force him to take antipsychotic drugs. The man is not psychotic. Not at all. And they have not succeeded because he is intelligent. So he has studied the law while he has been imprisoned under forensic circumstances. So every time they tried to force him to take these horrible drugs, he could tell them that you don't live up to the law. You're actually violating the law. So they are very fed up with him. And the last thing I've heard now is that now they will succeed forcing him to take antipsychotic drugs. So this is like these drugs were used in the Soviet Union. They're used in the same way in our Western societies today to control people, also normal people who are not suffering from a psychotic disorder. And he's not the only one. I know of several such stories. So what can we do, Peter, other than I give a lot of talks, I participate on radio shows and television documentaries and so on, and you have done a lot as well, an incredible amount you have done and achieved. And this is what we can do, us Davids, against a huge monster Goliath that has unlimited power. They can even tell you that you are sick, although you're completely normal. There have even been psychiatrists that have given me diagnoses in the press and at meetings. They don't know me. So they abuse their specialty to gain ultimate power. They can always label someone with the diagnosis. And if a patient is bright and challenges a psychiatrist, there is surely some diagnosis for that, which they can use as an excuse for drugging people or putting them in belts or whatever, in the worst case, giving them electroshock because they have been verbally threatening to some psychiatrist. Maybe they have just shouted to the psychiatrist that I've had enough of this. Take me off this drug. I want to get home. I want to get out. And then you are seen as problematic, and then you are drugged. You know very well, Peter, that this happens every day, everywhere.
Absolutely. You know, Peter, I don't know, you probably don't know this, but this, the same thing happened to me. It's now maybe 50 years ago. I'm back in the early 70s, not 50, but a long time ago, when a very big-time psychiatrist in Boston started writing about me, at first indirectly as being a paranoid schizophrenic, for criticizing lobotomy. That's all I was known for at that point, was criticizing lobotomy.
Oh, my
and
God.
He was a big supporter of lobotomy. And he stood up at a conference that I was at and said he told his patients not to listen to me. Apparently they were hearing me. And gave me another psychiatric diagnosis, and I sued him. And he settled in about 73 or 4 for $30,000 or $40,000, which back now that would be like $300,000.
Yeah.
And I never got diagnosed again in public by any psychiatrist in the United States or.
Too expensive to diagnose you, Peter.
That's right. Yes, you may need to make it expensive to diagnose you, too. Only thing that the psychiatric establishment and these leading psychiatrists respond to is fear.
Yes.
They're
I agree
child
completely.
Abusers and men who abuse their wives. If you threaten them without really scaring them, they just up the abuse. They have to be stopped by paying a price, and I don't know how to do that, other than what we're doing.
No, well, there is one way forward. We have seen on television U.S. police beating up black people for no good reason. And there have been scandals in the U.S. because of this. And I really think we need to do the same in psychiatry. We need to tape record. We need to film what is going on, because people can hardly believe what is going on if it is not documented on tape or on film. So this is one way forward. And some people have done that. And there are documentaries coming now on Danish television that will shock the whole psychiatric establishment. So they will start by the autumn of this year. So we are looking very, very much forward to these documentaries. They will really lead to change in this country. And I will give you one example how bad it all is, and that everybody that has some power stick together. I have this withdrawal course in June in Copenhagen, and I wanted to put an advertisement in a magazine that is being distributed by the most important mental health organization in Denmark. And I thought, I know that thousands of their members desperately want to come off the drug, but they cannot find a doctor that will help them or a doctor that knows how to help them. So I thought, well, they must be overjoyed that I and a psychiatrist and some pharmacists and others that we are conducting this course, and that we invite patients, their relatives, psychiatrists, general physicians, psychologists, everybody who wants to join us. Oh, no, they didn't want to bring our advertisement, even though I, of course, would pay for it. They tried to avoid to tell their members that there is this course that can help all of you who wants to come off psychiatric drugs. And this is because the leaders of this organization, whom do they talk to? They talk a lot to the psychiatrists, of course. And they have come to believe all these fairy tales from the psychiatrists. So what they believe is that there are no people who are drugged who don't need the drugs. Because if they didn't need the drugs, of course the psychiatrist would take them off the drugs. That is their little fairy tale, Peter.
Yeah.
They believe in this, although many of their members have told their leaders this is not true. I was invited to lecture in one of their local somewhere, and that was for some of their members that lived in that area. And I gave a talk, and I talked about abstinence symptoms when people try to get off. I talked about harms and all that. And there was a leading person from the organization who contradicted me during the discussion and said I wasn't correct and people like these drugs. And then some of the listeners told him, this is not true. I have experienced exactly the abstinence symptoms that Peter has told us about. And a mother in the first row said that I had saved her daughter because she was told by the psychiatrist that her daughter needed an antipsychotic drug and that it was very important that the mother told her daughter every day to remember to take the drug and not to skip any dose. And then I think she read my book or something else I had written. And then she realized, my goodness, this is wrong. Then she took her daughter off the drug. And imagine, Peter, the daughter became well. So that mother was immensely grateful. Of course, you have had many of these experiences, but why is it so difficult? It is like a religion that people come to believe in common themes that are just not correct. And so the psychiatrist and the people who should actually represent their members, they become so close to the psychiatrist that they no longer represent their members. Have you experienced this in the United States? I'm sure you have, Peter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started writing about it decades ago. You know, I called it the psychopharmaceutical complex. Now
yeah.
I'm calling it the psychopharmaceutical empire because
yeah.
it has a great – I mean, on one side, you have human vulnerability. All human beings suffer, and none of us like it. And we all wish there were ways to ease our suffering, and most of us have done bad things to ourselves in one way or another to try not to suffer. And we've avoided issues and important value conflicts. not to suffer. So that one hand you have the vulnerability of human beings, and we're very vulnerable in civilization because we didn't evolve to live in large communities. We evolved to live in extended families, yeah. And we don't have them anymore. And many, yeah. many reasons, the economics and so on. But the key here is humans are always vulnerable. What's changed is the enormous exertion of power by the drug companies, through the federal government, through the media, through the schools, through the medical schools, through the insurance companies, to push this stuff on people and take advantage of them. I want to come back to something earlier, Peter, that's really not at all about what we are talking about, but you brought this up, and I don't want to let it go by, even at the risk of offending some of my listeners. The fact that around the world people are watching videos and so on of American cops beating up people has about as much validity to it as what we're talking about in regard to psychiatry. The American media is extremely hostile to the police. The police in America have a task probably not quite to be found anywhere in the world. We have cities, Peter, in which thousands of young black men are killing each other. Thousands.
Yes. Yeah.
Chicago, Detroit. And this exists in smaller ways everywhere, even to some small extent in my little town of Ithaca. Everywhere, police in our country are beleaguered. And to whip the power from them by picking on every event that happens as if police are murderous is robbing America's inner cities of their policing. The cops can't do anything anymore in America. I know some of them. They don't know what to do. Ginger and I pay a lot of attention to this. We read about the police stuff. We talk to police, which people in my position in America don't do. Intellectuals don't talk to police in America. They hate them without ever meeting them. And they're at their wits' ends. And we've looked at all of these incidents that keep coming up. Very few of them involve a bad cop. Most of them vary from a cop defending himself, often a black cop in these inner cities, or it's a judgment call and the cop is scared. Once in a while, you see a cop going berserk and shooting somebody 8 times or something. But by and large, to be a policeman in the U.S. in our cities is to be a saint because you're so restrained and you're so watched. So I just want to come back to a lot of what this gets just sent around the world by the media is simply false or exaggerated or twisted for a political purpose. And the same newspaper, the New York Times, that is selling drugs to people and won't cover our critiques, is also selling to people to hate the cops. So I feel more and more I want to say something about these things because a lot of really wonderful people like you take for granted that all that is so true that I'm going to obviously agree with it.
I just don't want that to happen, so I just wanted to say that, Peter.
You can respond or not as you feel.
No, Peter, I am very grateful that you told your listeners about this, and I'm not American, but we follow a lot in Denmark what happens in your country, and I agree with you. It must be a very, very demanding job to be a policeman in Detroit and in other places like that, in Los Angeles and whatever it is. And they must be very scared also at many times. They are dealing with people who are not functioning normally because they have taken drugs, and if they don't shoot first, they might get killed themselves and all that sort of thing. And then, Peter, something you don't realize, Pete,
let me interrupt a minute, is that a lot of the attacks and rioting is driven by extreme leftist money and propaganda. They're organized attacks on the police in this country.
Oh, I see. I see. But also, I have also seen in my country how incredibly abusive people can be when they are a gang facing some policeman. So I can easily understand if some policemen lose their temper now and then. That's very easy to understand. So thank you for correcting me, Peter.
Hey, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. And this can be more and more of a problem in Europe with the clash of cultures going on.
Oh, yeah.
And you're gonna, more and more going to have to protect your police, believe me.
Oh, yeah. You know, the little... now, we shouldn't talk perhaps so much about crime, but Malmö in Sweden, just opposite Copenhagen, when I was younger, it was a peaceful, relatively small town in Sweden. And now they have a lot of murders there.
Yeah.
And these are gang murders. The gangs, they kill themselves. And sometimes some innocent people get shot down and die as well in the street. So this has just developed very badly while I have been living. Yeah.
Well, listen,
okay.
Thank you so much for listening in a thoughtful way. But it is interesting that, everybody who assumes that I'm buying this whole, that I must be a reformer who buys the entire extreme progressive critique of America, and I don't.
Okay. Yeah.
We could talk. You know, I've written a book called "Wow, I'm an American," and it's hated around the world. I've even been attacked from Germany for writing "Wow, I'm an American," and in America too, there are just so many people who don't want to look about what is good about this country, what has enabled this country to save the world in two great world wars. People just don't want to look at the good side of us, and that means that we're progressively losing the good side of us. So get back to your stuff. You're witnessing a lot of attack on you. How much I went through that years and years ago, and still do. There are attacks that are on me that are so bad within the past year or two, I don't even talk about them. So it's a part and parcel of what we live with doing reform work. It shows we're having an effect.
Oh, I am surprised that they still attack you, because they have tried for decades and they haven't succeeded. So you would expect them to give up at some point.
Well, what's happened is I've started to get more effective in some other areas now. And Ginger and I were thinking that the act was going to fall. And I don't want to even talk about what the areas are, but I'm having a pretty big impact on some of the drug companies.
Yeah.
And, getting bigger and bigger again. And so I can always tell I'm having an impact by the responses I get. But it's not going to stop me. And if anything, it energizes us. Not that we like it. But it's either energize or fold up, you know.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about it, if you're attacked and these attacks are completely unfair, then you and I react in the same way. We become just more determined to change psychiatry. So if anything, it has the opposite effect.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does have the opposite effect. And they realized that for a while, but then I didn't retire and go away.
That's the same thing with me, that psychiatrists sometimes talk about, is that man never going to retire? And no, he isn't.
Yeah, exactly.
But things are moving, after all, but they move very, very slowly. We will get a hearing in the Danish Parliament about stopping forced drugging. That will come this year. And they just started the first medicine-free department in Norway the 1st of January. So we will learn from that. And the resistance in Norway has been tremendous against this among mainstream psychiatrists. And their arguments are not very well thought through. So if you get the chance of debating with these people while politicians are listening, it's actually not too difficult to explain to politicians that all this force in psychiatry creates much more harm than good. So, but the politicians' problem is that when they then want to do something, then all the psychiatrists unite and say, we can't work as psychiatrists if you make this law, because we need all access to all this force. And then what can the politicians do? Because they're dependent on the psychiatrists, and if they tell them that they can't work, then can they... Hello?
I'm here.
Well, I have a problem with my phone. I have a...
Yeah, you're starting to break up. I think I'm going to be left with... having to finish up the hour for a little bit. Let me remind my engineer what's going on. Some instant messaging, folks, back and forth. He actually was right on top of it, and he's going to call Peter back. He may be on a cell phone, and in which case maybe he ran out of battery or something. We'll see. I want to tell you a little bit, since I talked a little bit about politics, a little bit about myself in that regard. I was a very progressive person on the left for my early life. Okay, he's back. We won't get to talk about it. Peter, are you back?
I'm back. It is these modern times where you have a battery in your portable phone. When I was a child, the phones were always working.
Well, listen, yeah. I almost started to give folks a 20-minute talk about my political origins. I'll do it another time.
Well, what I was talking about is that even the politicians are not too difficult to convince that major reforms are needed in psychiatry. Then when the psychiatrists, they barricade themselves and say, well, we can't live with that, then what can you do as a politician? Because it's not so popular anyhow to become a psychiatrist, so they are scared that there will be too few of them.
Wouldn't that be a shame? My God, it would make me weep, too few psychiatrists. You know, nowadays, if all they do is drug people, we could do entirely without them.
True, it would be good for the patients. I agree with you.
Yeah, we'd have much less expensive therapists, counselors, social workers, psychologists, family therapists. We could start setting up programs like they have in Finland, of family interventions early in the lives of children who are having breakdowns, in which case they can recover completely. It's what I do in my practice. If somebody has a breakdown, it comes to me, you know, I get the whole family involved. Unless it's an extraordinarily harmful family, which is rare, you know, they're willing to try to make up for what happened. I was thinking during the break, while I was thinking about many things as you went silent, I was thinking that, you know, the attack on involuntary treatment should have a subtitle to it that says, make them offer something good. When you have involuntary treatment, you don't have to offer anybody good, anything good. Hitler didn't have to offer something good to the Nazis. You don't have to offer anything good if you can just control people involuntarily. And yeah. Human nature is you give them all that power and they'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Emphasize that, Peter. Give them a chance to do. Yeah, stop psychiatry from brutalizing people. Stop psychiatry from coercing people. Give them a chance to offer something good. We're doing them a favor.
Try to make people decide for themselves. But we are on this road now. There will also be a medicine-free department in Denmark before too long. The government has set aside some money for that. And the open dialogue principle is spreading throughout Germany and England and elsewhere, where they actually talk to acutely psychotic patients instead of restraining them and drugging them and belting them and whatever. And the long-term outcomes are much, much, much better, of course. So it's all there. You can't escape it. But still, why is it so difficult to change when it is so obvious that it should be changed? I mean, if these drugs were so good, why would you need to force them into people?
Well, they're not for the people's good. That's the darn problem we have to face. Forcing drugs on people is a method of empowering yourself, controlling them, performing a so-called public service when you're actually injuring other people. It's a whole bag of wax or roll of whatever, barbed wire or knotted up, I don't know, about
Peter,
control versus liberation, oppression.
I should tell you that these dames that do these documentaries about psychiatry, when they have interviewed psychiatrists about all sorts of things, then they sometimes take a package of Zyprexa, this antipsychotic drug, put it in front of the psychiatrist and ask them, what if you yourself got an acute psychosis? Would you be happy to take this drug? And what happens is that they become very quiet. Now, if they were so convinced that the drugs they are forcing into patients were really good for them, why don't they then spontaneously say, yes, of course I would? If somebody asked me, if I get a life-threatening bacterial infection, would I take penicillin? Of course I would, dummy. Of course I would. Everybody would. But so far they have not reacted spontaneously. They have become thoughtful, Peter. This tells a story. They publicly, they say that these drugs are important and necessary for people. They even sometimes say that they prolong their lives, although they're a major reason why people live so shortly when they are on antipsychotic drugs. So they say the opposite. But when they're asked whether they want to take the drugs themselves, they actually reveal themselves.
Well,
isn't that frightening?
You know,
isn't that frightening?
They're less sophisticated than American psychiatrists who undoubtedly on camera without skipping a beat would say, oh, of course I would. I'd give it to my mother. That's what I got when I was talking about lobotomy and shock. Oh, of course I would. And I'd give it to my mother.
maybe Danish psychiatrists are less smart than American ones.
But less experienced with being battered.
They'll
learn to smile on camera and say, of course I would.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the ideas is that...
Peter, by the way, this is great what you're doing. I mean, you're just getting a lot of stuff started.
Well, yeah, now we will do these courses and there will be these documentaries that you undoubtedly will see in America as well. They will be sold to other countries, and yeah, we just have to keep on, and when we can point to people who have become healthy by coming off drugs through our courses and through the doctors we educate in our courses, then perhaps it can be a snowball effect that just grows and grows. There will be more and more people out there who will say it is not true. The fantasy story that everybody hears about is simply not true. We need to mobilize these people who have been harmed. We need to take the harms away from them so that they can join us and tell the world that all these stories are not true.
Yeah, I think the media is incredibly important. It's just so hard to know what will ever turn around such a Goliath of power. Yeah. You know, in our country, which is the source of all of much of this grief, not all of it by any means. In fact, the whole antipsychotic drug movement started in Central Europe and then England. But it's really hard to know what will stop it. In our country, there's no regulation of drug prices. That's how Obama got Obamacare passed, you know, the national health care program that's now being, hopefully, I think, I'd like to see it fastly changed or undone. But the way he got it through in our country was by bringing in the drug companies as partners. Yeah. Because they're the most wealthy advertisers and wealthy powers by saying we are not going to regulate price of medications. So I might pay 50 times more for a medication here than in some other place in the world.
Yeah.
It's this power is so huge.
Oh, yeah. It has become so big that it's very, very difficult to deal with.
I used to be able to get, and all of us in the United States who were reformers, we used to get more on television about, for example, the dangers of Prozac. I was on television every, practically every show you could imagine. I was on Oprah and, you know, just all kinds of shows, just about everything in the 70s talking about, I'm sorry, the 90s talking about Prozac. But when we got direct-to-consumer advertising here, then all the media, their best customers were the cars, the alcohol, and the drugs. You don't get hardly anything on major media anymore, by me or anybody else, that is related to criticizing drugs, because they could have a huge chunk of their advertising pulled out from under them.
People
need to realize, at least, you know, if we can't do anything directly about them and confronting them by telling the true story, which you do very well in your books, and your books are so good. I really want to encourage people to read Deadly Psychiatry and Organized Denial. Then the people can change. I think this is going to be more like the Berlin Wall coming down when people just say, we're not going anymore. We're not going to do this anymore. We quit.
And you know, the interesting thing is that it has been shown both in studies in England and in Denmark that if you use psychotherapy instead of drugs, then it is considerably cheaper in the long run. There is absolutely no doubt about that. So it shouldn't be too difficult politically to do a major change.
Well, providing the drug companies just don't hold total sway. I mean, right now, psychiatry around the world is a sales division of the pharmaceutical industry. My fellow psychiatrists, any of you listening out there, you're nothing more than a sales division of the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to make this, has made this very slow and very hard. When I took on the lobotomists, for example, it was like you said about the drugs. I got people in Congress to listen to me. It made sense to them not to lobotomize people. The conservative senators just listening to me talk for 5 minutes said, that's immoral. We have to stop it. the Black Caucus would listen and say, my God, they're doing lobotomies on little black children in Mississippi. We're going to stop it. And there was no huge counterforce. Yeah, the APA tried to stop me. The AMA tried to stop me. But there were, but the largest corporations in the world didn't give a hoot about what I was doing. And I basically was able to stop most of lobotomy in the Western world, although it's coming back somewhat. So the big difference is that just psychiatry and neurosurgery with their freaky practices, they don't have all the power, or nowhere near the power, without the drug companies. And the partnership, which I describe in Toxic Psychiatry, how it was formed, I quote the minutes of the board of the American Psychiatric Association, it was a conscious partnership with the drug companies to save psychiatry from going broke because they couldn't compete with the therapists. I mean, that's what happened, Peter. In the U.S., psychiatrists couldn't compete with social workers and psychologists who were giving better services. Psychiatrists were going broke. The APA was going broke. And this partnership they made with the pharmaceutical industry has made them all wealthy. Just incredibly. And that's the power we're looking at. And I imagine you agree with me about that.
It's very difficult to know how to deal with this. But you know, little by little, things happen. The Finnish man I told, the Finnish man I told you about, that took his son to Spain and was in hiding there for a full year. He realized how bad these drugs were for his son, because he had read one of your books, the one called Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry.
How nice. Thank you.
So that was when he woke up and took care of his son and took him to another country. So
will you let me know if I can do anything helpful for him or any of these projects you're working on? But I think that you're doing it on your own is just great, or with the people you're working with.
Now he wants to use me as an expert witness in a court case in order to find out where is his son in Finland and how can he come home again, or at least not being drugged. And I could do nothing else than court cases and give up my job because so many people want me to get involved in these cases. I can't do that. I mean, we are looking at tens of thousands of very badly treated people.
Millions.
Oh, yes, it's millions.
Tens should go before millions. Tens of millions.
Yeah, that's correct. So if any of the listeners has a bright idea, how can we do this more effectively so that our lawmakers realize that now this is enough? So we will ban forced treatment and we will do a lot of other things and make the patients choose themselves, just like in the rest of healthcare, where you cannot force things on a patient. Of course, I know there are very difficult situations like anorexia where a person might be dying, but then we are allowed to feed that person anyhow if you are in life danger. But this is being abused by the psychiatrists, that they say so often that if the patients don't get these toxic drugs, then their life will be endangered. But this is simply a lie.
Absolutely. Yeah, all we need for we have emergency laws and emergency traditions in American medicine, certainly where if there's a real genuine life-threatening issue in an emergency room, doctors can generally take action. And it's very limited. You can only take that action to save that life in a very concrete way. In psychiatry, it's all smoke and mirrors, so you can save their lives for 10 years while you lock them up in prison.
Yes.
Oh, God.
It's true. It's true. Lord. It's a very strange specialty where you get so many emails from people who try to escape from psychiatry, try to break out. I mean, this is like prisoners. It is like wartime where you are taken by the enemy and you try to get home. It is actually very much the same.
Or slavery. Thomas Sass always compared psychiatry to slavery. And there's a lot to that. There is a lot to that. One of my hopes is, you know, the drug companies, I don't believe, and again, I'd be interested in what you think, have the same power in Europe that they have in the U.S. They've just got our whole society under their thumb and they're squishing. I don't think they have quite that power, and I think that you're going to make some good headway there.
That's true. They are not equally powerful, but they are very powerful nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, listen, we have only 2 minutes left, I've been told. Some thoughts for, you know what I didn't do? I didn't talk about the book. This is, folks, this is a part of the series that I've been doing for the, is it the Sedative Society, Sedating Society book from Paul Grave, that Davies is the editor of, and I'm doing a whole series of shows with the authors of that book, because he put together just a great bunch of people. And so I want to remind folks about that book as well. And that's what this is a part of. And next week, Peter, I'm going to be talking to Sammy Tamimi, a really good pediatrics psychiatrist, child psychiatrist in Great Britain. He's a real humanitarian. He's a good man. He's working in the system, but he's doing good things in the British system. And I look forward to having him on next week. Peter, it's always great to talk to you. Always warms my heart, gets my blood going.
And you can look forward.
Do you have a closing thought for us? 1 minute.
You can look forward to next week. Sammy Tamimi is very good.
Peter Gerze, thank you so much for being on. And go get his books, folks.